Here we go. This is Felger and Mass.
Yeah, Rex Ryan here.
I hate guests.
Yep.
There's no reason to touch them.
Keep it in your pants.
Why would you do that? Felger and Mass, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's not bad when you see the video, Murray. It's not bad.
I've since seen the video. Yeah, no, he's being playful, but I still, hearing it, he's wearing a mask. This is disingenuous. He's now the de facto leader of this team. That's how it looks. And I think he asserted himself as that towards the end of last year anyways. Okay, right now, David Price, the leader of this team. Bad. Because that means to me that he's going to infect the clubhouse with more negativity. Because this is an act. He's not going to be able to hang with keep doing this. I'll just keep telling you guys what you want to hear. We hate the Yankees. What else? Oh, I hate the Jets. Belichick screwed up the Super Bowl. Traffic sucks around here. What other kind of things
do you
want to hear?
Exactly.
It's so, all of that.
To me, I don't think he's being an a-hole today. And Jimmy, we'll play the whole exchange. I don't think he's being an a-hole.
No, me either.
But it's
he's
now,
being something he's not, though.
But this is the lead clip on ESPN. We hate the Yankees. He's playing along and having a good time with the reporters. It's not malicious. He's not being a jerk. But it's like they're the ones. He's the one that they went to on this, and he's the one that gave them the quotes. And it's like, who's the face of the Red Sox? And it's like David Price. Again, here's the hate the Yankees.
Stanton of the Yankees, JD here. Is it starting to feel a little like that Red Sox-Yankee rivalry is coming back?
Sure, yeah. Yeah, you guys won it. Let's do it. We hate the Yankees.
We hate the Yankees.
We hate them.
Were you a part of that 08 team that kind of came in and, you know, until then it was that two-horse race, and then, you know, it's changed since then. But there was a time where it was all about that. It feels a little like, you know, the two big clubs loading up again. Do you feel like that in the clubhouse at all?
Not in the clubhouse. Yeah, I mean, yeah, we hate the Yankees. So, yeah, it's building up big time.
So, again, he's just playing the role there, but this is what stands out to me, is that he's taking this sort of upfront role. And when J.D. Martinez is asked or is asking around about coming here, he calls David Price. He played with him in Detroit, so they're friends. I get it. But David Price is the one to tell him about Boston. David Price is the one to tell him the lay of the land with the Red Sox.
That's a hell of a representative.
That is frightening. And Steve Buckley, again, did a great job today in the Boston Herald, talking about if Martinez wants to follow David Price's advice and avoid the negativity, then perhaps he should avoid David Price. Like, wrong guy. And not that David Price said anything really wrong to him.
Mm.
Borderline, right? Borderline. Where David Price says, oh yeah, he'll get booed, referring to Martinez. I told JD he'll love the guys here in the clubhouse, but also told him he'll get booed. He's a quiet, soft-spoken guy, but he'll handle it. Besides, everyone gets booed. I heard Big Poppy booed many times at Fenway Park.
Many?
Many. So, and C. Buckley takes him apart for that, which is good. You know, good job, Buck. But it's like, not only does David Price tell him that, David Price then, that was in USA Today. David Price offers that up to Bob Nightingale in USA Today. So this is like your spokesman. This guy, here's David Price on J.D. Martinez today.
It's different to me, so it's good. We didn't talk about anything baseball-wise, not a thing.
Yeah.
No, me and JD have continued to be friends ever since we were teammates in Detroit. You know, we've continued to check in on each other. You know, last year when he had the four-homer game in L.A., I remember talking to him after that. He's always asked me about Astro and my son, so we've just remained friends, and we didn't talk anything about baseball.
So I guess he started contradicting what he told Nightingale there. You know, Astro. Again, he asked about Astro before his son. He mentions Astro before his son,
the
Murray.
Family and the mother-in-law, too. No, what's important is the dog. I can talk French bulldogs till I'm blue in the face.
He asked me about Astro.
He loves that dog.
Did he really say that? Did he really say that, Stu? I need to hear that again. Did he really say he asked me about Astro?
He's always asked me about Astro.
That's
something that I would do as a bit for this show. It's amazing.
That's a bit? Who asks about your dog? Who asks about the dog?
How's Astro?
What's there to say? How's the dog? Good. That's it. That's the end of the conversation.
How's your cat, Murray? Is it still alive?
Yeah, still alive. He's good.
Okay. I don't really care about your cat.
Yeah, that's all.
I just thought to ask.
I don't know. I kind of love my dog.
Do I ever ask about your dog?
No, I don't think you even knew I had a dog.
How's your dog?
Jupiter.
He always asks about my dog and my kid.
How's Jupe?
It's like the kid's his afterthought, the dog, though. He wants to know about Astro.
How's Sally, Mike? Sally good?
It's unbelievable.
If I was going somewhere and starting a new job, I'd want to know as much about the job as possible.
That's the other thing.
Well, we didn't talk about work. We talked about the stuff that's important.
He's always asked me about Astro.
No, see, you know what? Actually, now that you say it, Murray, maybe that's what happened. Maybe J.D. Martinez said, so tell me about the job. And he heard, tell me about the dog.
So this is what is fascinating to me is the psychology of David Price. You know, he doesn't like it here. He doesn't like us. We don't like him. He didn't choose here. He only did because it was a gross overpayment. He didn't want to come here. He doesn't like it here. He's coming off of a hellacious year where he just gets pounded for the Dennis Eckersley thing, and rightfully so. And he's a pitcher to boot. So pitchers generally aren't team spokesmen. They aren't. They play once every 5 days. And it's just sort of a different deal, right? Maz usually isn't the team spokesman and the guy out front a position player versus a pitcher. Very rarely.
Yes, more often than not, yes.
Very rarely is the pitcher the guy.
By a lot.
Yet, the most quotable material, the guy who's been out there more than anyone else so far this year, David Price. USA Today, ESPN Today, I hate the Yankee thing, J.D. Martinez, that's the guy. He went through me to find out about Boston. It's David Price is the face of the team.
Well, it speaks to the void they have in the leadership department in the middle of the clubhouse.
And the fact that he's embracing it or asking for it, to me, is mind-blowing.
Yeah, see, I think this is part of the campaign.
Mind-blowing.
That's what I think it is. I think this is all an attempt on the part of the team to make sure they rehabilitate their image after last year, and Price is at the top of the list. Somebody talked to them. Maybe it was Werner. I mean, whoever it was, Price's agent, because it feels more global than Price now. It feels team-wide, and maybe he's just at the top of the list. But the whole thing, trust me, this is going to be a disaster. If Price is at the top of it, it will be a disaster because things are going to go bad. They always go bad in baseball at some point. Every team goes through it. They all do. And at some point, Price is going to lose 3 in a row and get his face kicked in, or they're going to lose 5 out of 6, or they're going to lose 6 in a row, or whatever it is, and someone's going to start asking questions, and they're going to crack. They're going to crack. Yeah. Unless they've truly matured, which it doesn't feel like they have.
No, they're the same team. And if he's at the helm, it guarantees they're going to be as oversensitive and bitchy and underachieving as last year. That's what it looks like to me.
Here's Mickey in Orange on David Price. Go ahead, Mickey.
Yeah, hey, we're going to have fun in Fenway this year. Murray, I want you to run with this. In the middle of the fourth, they're going to have people dressed up as Fenway Franks and bottles of mustard running around the field. And then Price is going to be on a losing streak. And he's going to trip one of them. Your thoughts?
Yeah, in the middle of the fourth. It's going to be 10:30 at night when all that goes down in the middle of the fourth, by the way.
Oh, he is. He's going to take out one of the weenies.
But why he just, like, put your nose down and pitch? Like, that's all anyone wants him to do. Yet he feels the need that he's the one that's out front. It's just the psychology of that, to me, is mind-blowing.
The way they will be embraceable is if they compete and they accept accountability. If they sit there and say, hey, look, you know, we got to do better than that. We're in for something big. It feels to me like these guys are soft. They're afraid of the responsibility that comes with their talent and their ability. Heaven forbid we actually want them to win.
We've got Bobby and Bill Ricca on J.D. Martinez. Hi, Bobby.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Not much. What do you got, Bob?
Well, so I was listening to Maz and he's saying how J.D. Martinez, if he doesn't hit 3,100, is kind of a failure. And then Murray's talking about you got to get Harper or Machado next year. But neither one of those guys have ever had a 30-100 season. So my question is, if he's looking at that as that's the benchmark for a good guy, why would anybody want to pay $30 million for those guys when you got Martinez for 22?
How many 3,100 guys were there last year?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. I'd have to look it up.
I mean, aren't there fewer than a dozen in a given year? Like, it's not this, we're out of the stair. Well, I don't know. Maybe it's back a little bit.
I'll check.
I thought a couple of years ago we looked at this, and there were like a handful. Like, there's just not many anymore.
So that's true.
You get 3,100 out of J.D. Martinez in his free agent year coming to Boston in year one. Oh, Maz, count your blessings.
I want 35 and 120.
Manny Machado in 6 years in the majors has been top 10 in MVP votes 3 times and a gold glover twice.
I'm not sure what...
The caller was asking about Machado and Harper, and he was dumping on him for never being 30-100. So
I'm telling you,
Manny Machado is a better player than J.D. Martinez and should be worth $30 million.
Okay, but is he a year-in, year-out 3,100 guy? That was his point, right?
Okay, but here's what I would tell you. Okay, Bryce Harper had 40-something homers 2 years ago. Didn't he win the MVP? Like, I look at Bryce Harper. He steps in the box, the game changes. Okay, the game changes. I don't know what the numbers are. I can't tell you what the numbers are. But I know that when he steps in the box, he has the attention of everybody in the stadium, especially the pitcher and the opposing manager. J.D. Martinez, in order to do that to me, has to be the equivalent of a 35-120 guy. That's what he's got to be.
So J.D. Martinez has been, functionally speaking, you know, 3 years really is what we have. 14, 15, so, I'm sorry, 4 years. Basically, it's 4 years. He's been an everyday ball player. 4 years. Here are his totals. You know, home run RBI. 23-76, 38-102, 22-68, 45-104. He's been over 100 RBIs just twice and barely.
Last year, there were 19 guys in the big leagues that had 30 and 100.
19, that's up.
30 and 100, yep. Ranging from Giancarlo Stanton to Jake Lamb.
Okay, so if he's one of the top 20, so that's call those top 20 power hitters in the game. If he's not one of those, if he's one of those, if he's 3,100, that's not good enough.
No, I think he's got to be more. He's got to be in the top 10 on that list. Like, this is sort of what I'm saying. Like,
give me the list.
Stanton, Judge, J.D. Martinez, Chris Davis, who's with Oakland, who hits for a really low average. I almost throw him out. Nelson Cruz, Encarnacion, Arenado, Charlie Blackman, Ozuna, Votto, Goldschmidt, Jay Bruce, Ryan Zimmerman, Upton, Abreu. That's the top 15. Then you get to Jonathan Scope, Rizzo.
If he's not on that list, I think you're asking for too much.
Okay, so I think the top 10 of that list generally is legit. And once you get past that and you start getting Jay Bruce, like, is Jay Bruce going to do it for him?
So you said OPS over under of 900. He's done that three times. I don't know, Maz. I just think.
Has he ever done it 2 years in a row?
No. No. 912, 879, 90. Yeah, he has. I'm sorry. 908, and then last year, 1,066.
Okay, well, that's a good sign then.
So he has. He has the last 2 years heading into this year. Put the bar low, Maz. I'm just telling you. Based off experience, put the bar low. You'll be happier at the end of the year. It's easier to clear.
Yeah, I'm not interested in being happy. I'm interested in him actually making a difference and winning.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Maz on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Felger. I like anti-coupable.
And Maz.
Stupid. They're so stupid.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Great teammate. Great player, obviously. Tons of power. You know, being with him in Detroit, you know, in 2014 in the first half of 15, and just watching the way he swung the bat, you know, just power to all fields. You know, he really took after Miggy's approach whenever he was in Detroit, and that did wonders for him. You know, he's going to drive the ball to right field, right center. If, you know, a pitcher makes a mistake with a breaking ball, he's going to, you know, hit that to left field. So it's fun to watch. He's a great dude. You know, he's a really good acquisition.
Oppo, if you want to throw up the chart again, Maz did the research. Maz's new thing, his new singular obsession, is J.D. Martinez hitting the bullpens from the right side of the plate. You know, not to put words in your mouth. Well, you tell me, why is that so important?
Okay, so again, there are lots of players in baseball that can hit 300. There are lots of guys that can hit home runs. There are very few guys that can do both. And it's one of the things I worry about with Xander Bogaerts, frankly, because the approaches oftentimes are not, you know, conducive to one another. If you do one, you can't do the other, because most guys to hit 300 have to hit the ball to the opposite field, but they can't hit for power there. Okay, so the great hitter can hit for power to the opposite field, not really sacrifice much in the way of average. So the question I have is, J.D. Martinez's power so real that he can drive the ball out to right and right center at Fenway, which is Death Valley? 380 to those bullpens, 420 to the triangle.
So what'd you do?
So I went to the web, and I looked up where J.D. Martinez's home runs went last season, what the distances were, and I was able to find on MLB.com a tool that allows you to take a player's spray chart, where those hits went, and lay it over any ballpark in the big leagues. I did that with Fenway, with J.D. Martinez, and the large majority of balls that he hit to right field. I counted 18 of them.
And if you're watching NBC Sports Boston and you're looking at the chart, you'll see that it's actually 21 that are over the fence, but Maz has taken away three.
It's 18. The other three are on the line.
Because he thinks that the right fielder is going to be making a leaping catch a la Jackie Bradley, or who was the kid who went over the fence last year for, was it Detroit? What was the, remember that catch? We went ass over tea kettle?
Austin Jackson.
What a catch that was. So Maz is taking three away from J.D. Martinez, assuming some sort of acrobatic catch.
Well, because they're on the line.
They're over the line.
No, they're on the line.
There's 21 over the line.
No, ties don't win. Okay? Ties don't win. You lose ties.
Hold on.
18 are over the line.
Is that one over the line or on the line?
That's on the line.
That's over the line.
That's on the line.
That's over the line.
Is it touching the line?
That one's touching the line, Mike.
It's on the line.
How about that one?
That's touching the line.
That's over the line!
I'm not even looking because I know you're manipulating the data. So on the simulcast, you can see it. You can
somewhere
also see
between
it.
18 and 21 are over the line.
You can see it on the Felger and Mazz Twitter account. You can see it on my Twitter account and on our Facebook page. We put up the diagram because it's a pretty instructive diagram in all seriousness. Okay, again, it's the outline of Fenway with the dimensions of Fenway, and the overlay is the home runs at J.D. Martinez.
He has opposite field power for this park.
Big time. Okay, based on these numbers. And my only question is, how many of those were hit in Arizona where the ball might have carried a little bit farther? And are we playing with the same ball we played with a year ago when Major League Baseball set a record for home runs?
And again, especially the ball in Arizona, which, because of atmospheric conditions, is dry and hard like in Coors Field, which is why they're bringing in a humidor to moisten and heavy the balls there in Arizona. So it was a launching pad in Arizona.
That's right. In Arizona, they played with a Titleist one on the moon. That's what they did. That ball went, you know, miles, for crying out loud. So look, this guy hits the ball all over the field. That part I knew. The question is, can he really drive it out to that part? Everyone says his power's legit. If he does, the Red Sox will be fine. They'll get their money's worth.
So, and again, that's just based on last year. I mean, to me, if he's the guy he was last year, it's a no-brainer, of course. The whole calculus, the whole question is, can he be that on a year-in, year-out basis? Can he be that in this lineup, on this team, after making his money? Because it's hard. Once you sign that free agent contract, it's hard to be the same player after the contract that you were before. The pressure of the contract, the pressure of the new team, the expectations. Maybe your training habits change, or your workout regimen change, or just your dedication changes. It changes for a lot of guys after they sign that contract. A lot. And so, if J.D. Martinez is 90% of the guy he was last year, you're in. You win. Good job. I just don't have the faith that he can be. I just don't have the faith that he can be that guy. So
he's going to make more money this year than he's made in his entire career to this point. Like, that should tell you something about where this guy came from.
And to me, he's not worth it. And to me, I wouldn't have done it. And I know this because 29 other teams in the league agree with me. And that's just, that occurred to me too late in this ballgame as well, which is, again, last year, he was the best power hitter in the game based on certain metrics. Home runs per at-bats, slugging percentage. He was 29 when the season started. Okay, turned 30 during the year. So he's basically in the heart, the meat of his prime, and he just came off a year where you could make an argument that he put up better numbers than Aaron Judge or Giancarlo Stanton or anyone else. And no one wanted him other than you. You were the only team that really went after him on a real free agent deal. I guess Arizona maybe offered him 1 or 2 year deals to come back for prove it sort of deals, and where he could hit the market again. But he put up that kind of year at his age, which again isn't too bad yet, 29 when last year started, and only one team made a serious run at him. So when you say, Felger, why don't you want him? I'd say, well, ask those 29 other teams the same thing.
That's such a major red flag to me. And that's one of the things that, you know, that I felt the same way. Like, I'm good. Like, the team should have been falling all over this guy. What's the issue? Do they think that he's a fraud because it's only been this 3 or 4 year sample size? I don't blame him.
I feel that. I mean, and look, I know there was collusion and it's a down market and, you know, he's not the only one who had to wait. I'm just telling you, if teams thought he was what he put up last year, he's not waiting till 2 weeks into spring training to get his money.
No, he gets snatched up.
If teams thought that was a legit 45, a legit 45-106, if that was a legit 1,066 OPS, he signed a hell of a lot sooner than he is. All right, so that's just the J.D. Martinez stuff. Today, Red Sox and Bruins rest of the way. Dante and Linfield on the Sox. Go ahead, Dante.
Hey, Mavs, just two pleadings for this year. Number one, can we not do lineup talk this year? I hate batting order talk. I just can't do it anymore. Number two, I think it's about time to start getting on Porcello. For all the things that Price does, obviously, you know, he is a dink. Personal stuff, that's fair. You know, but the first year here, he had a 3.99. He won 17 games. And last year, he wasn't all that bad either. Porcello, this whole Eckersley blow-up is the best thing to ever happen to him because he's completely gone under the radar. And like,
so let me just stop you. What's your expectation for Rick Porcello this year?
To me, Rick Porcello, what I would expect from him every year is something like 12-11 with a 4 ERA, an even 4, something close, 390, 410, whatever. To me, he's a 500 pitcher that'll give you 185 innings, 180 innings, and, you know, and that's it. So split the last 2 years, and that's basically what you get. I mean, how many games did he lose last year?
So hold on. I mean, let's just get so Rick Porcello's ERA by year: 3.96, 4.92, 4.75, 4.59, 4.32, 3.43, 492-315-465. What's the aberration?
The low three.
The 315.
Yeah, so his career ERA is 4.25, 4.25. What did I say? A 4 ERA?
Yeah.
So, I'm a little low. Last year, he gave up 38 homers.
Lost 17 games.
38. The year before, again, you average out the 2 years, and he's probably something in the middle.
If he's sub-4, take it. If he's sub-4,
yes,
take it and
absolutely.
Run.
Again, I'll take 4. Give me 12-11 with a 4 ERA. Good. See you later.
Bobby and Revere, go ahead.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Welcome
what do you
back.
Got?
Welcome back. Yeah, believe me, I'm not a David Price man. But I was wondering, with the three of you, the terrible disdain you have for Price, and the condition of the Red Sox team where they're all vanilla. Actually, not even pure vanilla. Partly vanilla. Is it possible, slightly, that he's the only one on the roster with a set of you-know-what and some sort of backbone?
So he's the only one that's sort of a lightning rod, meaning like you really sink your teeth into, and like he's good for the talk show. If they didn't have David Price, oh my God, what were we talking
about?
Like, we'd be in real trouble with this team. So like there's value there that he's a polarizing figure, but I would, what, you think he has balls? Bobby and Revere? Is that what he said? That he's only got a set?
Who's the guy on this team that's a winner?
You know, you want to say Chris Sale.
And when but he's never done it either.
Well, in terms of the resume, it's really just Pedroia.
I mean, so, and when I say winner, I mean a guy who stands up when they lose and say, no, that's not going to cut it. We got to do better than that.
I don't think that they have that at all.
They don't. They don't. And this is the thing. So as much as Ortiz would lose his mind, and I say, go crazy and be emotional and everything else, when all was said and done, Ortiz could sit there with the other guys on the team and say, it's not good enough. We got to do better than this. We're capable of more. We can block it out. We can do it.
No, he's good for us and, doing the dumb impersonation or whatever and to talk about. But for them, and as young as that clubhouse is, you could infect those guys for the rest of their careers.
Here's an update.
He's not a winner.
Here's an update from Murray. Another big win for the Bruins last night. To the point where you're buying it all the way through the trade deadline. The Bruins talked to you about don't mess with the chemistry. You begin to believe that after more and more wins like last night. We'll hit on that right after Murray's update. Don't go anywhere.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. You're listening to Felger and Maz.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha hee hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
DeBrusk turns to his forehand. Back to McAvoy, the one-timer caroms. Grizzlick scores! The Bruins have come from 2 goals down in the third period. Talbot is on his belly in disbelief. Boston's sheer effort has Edmonton caved in over its sticks. The body language tells the whole story here.
No business winning that game, and they win it. So what? At what point do you throw up your hands and say, okay, well, they're really this good. They're really this good, and you don't want to mess with it. The deadline. Are you ready to do that?
No.
Murray, are you ready to do that?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, this is the one team
You're
I am
so gonna... easy.
No,
I love it.
Mike, the sample size is now a couple of months, and I know Edmonton sucks, but... that's a type of game that shows you, again, that this team has balls and they could be poised for a deep cup run here. They really could. They're buying in.
They're relentless. They really are relentless. The problem is that in the playoffs, everybody's relentless. And so any edge that they have there is gone. That's why I think that, look, again, they're a great story. I'm not going to sit here and tell you the Bruins don't deserve credit for what they've done because I felt this way for a while. They're a great story. They are. They are a great, great story. But... they're overachieving. Their talent isn't this good.
Yeah, but when you top... so last night, your top line isn't all that good for the night. The power play, especially the power play one, which has been iffy at best as of late. So it's a bad night for them. It's a 2-goal deficit. You're going into the third period. Under Claude, I'm still going to reference the guy. Under Claude, that's, you pack it in, that's it. We'll see you Saturday in Toronto. And you come back with your grinders? And you win that way? Like, that's... I'm sorry, I know Edmonton sucks, but I have to look at that and be like, okay, this is more who they are. Because I've seen this... more often than not over the last couple of months.
So stay the course of the deadline.
I mean, if you can make some kind of deal, yeah, I still think you should tweak a little bit because they do need another wing on that second line. But beyond that...
well, that's a pretty major move, Murray. That's a pretty big move.
But I'm not giving up to DeBrusk. That's the one... like, I'm not. Like, you can't have him. And don't do anything nutty. I can understand why they look at this right now and they don't want to break it up. I'd still like to see them make another move to bring in another wing. But beyond that, I'm kind of good.
I'm telling you, Bruce Cassidy right now, magic touch, man. If I'm a single guy in my 20s, you bring him to the bar with you, pal. You're getting laid. There's just no two ways about it, because that guy is smoking hot right now. I'm telling you, we need to grab him, kidnap him, and go to Vegas. Between the sex and the gambling, we will never get any better than that. Seriously.
Nick in Rhode Island, your thoughts?
Hey, Mike, real quick before I get into a point about the trade deadline. I mean, you have to look at that game last night and just attribute the fact that Edmonton is a complete dumpster fire this year. I mean, really underperforming, to say the least. Bruins are 1-12-3 in games going into the third period when they're down. So, but yeah, aside from that, really would have liked to see, with all these talks about McDonough being on the market, if the Bruins are able to shell out Rob O'Gara and a third-round pick for a rental and Nick Holden when they already have Paul Postma sitting on the bench in reserves and Kevin Miller's going to come back. You'd like to think that they have assets, or at least they think they have assets, to go out and get somebody like a McDonough, who you mentioned before, you could lock him down for a few years.
So, well, you can't. I mean, you got to wait to sign him. I mean, he's going to go to free agency, so he's got 2 years left on his contract. So, I mean, you could re-sign him. You can re-sign him as a free agent. That second part bugged me. That's not the factor. You're trading for the next year and a half, and then you have to sign him as a free agent like anybody else. So there's no long-term security with Ryan McDonough. That's a major move altering the DNA of your team. Are you willing to alter the DNA of your team, Maz, given how they've played and how many of these situations they've came to? And quickly, yeah, last night you want to treat last night as a one-off. Edmonton sucks. You know, the Bruins haven't come through in that situation, so last night was a one-off lucky thing. Fine. They've been doing it all year. They've been doing it all year. Like, for the last 3+ months, they've been doing this. Okay? So it's not just about last night. But are you willing to alter the DNA of your team?
No, I'm not going that far. I'm not. Now, look, I think they could use an upgrade. Don't get me wrong. But you're talking about the kind of deal that would require you to change course a little bit. You know, now you're talking short term more than long term. And I'm not doing that. I'm not doing it. I like Ryan McDonough. I like, you know, and you know the player better than I do. I like everything I hear about him. I like the makeup. I like the production. I like all of it. But to do that, you're going to have to give up young talent, cost controlled talent. And at a time where I don't think you're ready to make a run at a cup. I don't think you're quite there yet. So I would, you know, I'd rather make a lesser move, a more calculated move, and continue to go with what you've got. They're early. I mean, I don't know how you feel.
They're early. But see, in hockey, you can be early and things break your way in the postseason. You can be early and go all the way. I mean, you can. I would not predict that from this team. I'm just telling you, the Celtics were in the NBA, you can be early and it's not going to matter. In the NHL, they shouldn't be here, but if you're there, it's like baseball. You know, teams are early all the time, and when they get there, they're there. Like, the hockey and baseball become that.
Okay, now, if you're telling me that they could make that kind of deal and sign McDonough and be able to retain McAvoy and... Fine, I'm in.
The thing about the McDonough thing, you're not going to know for a year and a half. He's not going to sign now.
So that makes me a little nervous.
You like, can't do that.
It just feels a little risky. And I like where they are developmentally right now. They got a good thing going. You know, you want to add a veteran guy that's a little less expensive and a little less of a DNA change, as you would say, that doesn't require you to alter the direction of your franchise and your build. I'm in. Anything major that is a huge shift in philosophy? No.
We've got Tim in Worcester on the Red Sox. Hi, Tim.
Hey, guys. I have this theory about the Red Sox and them possibly being a trade or a sale opportunity, and if you give me a couple seconds, I'll explain what I'm basing it on.
Go ahead.
So if you look at 2014 to 2016, the Red Sox signed Rusny Castillo, Pablo Sandoval, Hanley Ramirez, and David Price. You throw in the $30 million they ate on Alan Craig's contract, who they knew was never going to play in the pros again, that's $500 million. So half a billion is a lot of money, even to a guy like John Henry. So at the end of last year, he sits down and looks at that and says, let me see, what have I gotten for my $500 million so far? I got one good year out of Hanley.
So hold on, get to the point. Tim, get to the punchline.
Okay, so the point is, he sees all this money laid out. He's not going to return on it. The team is not in an upward direction, the negativity that Price creates.
Okay, so what? So what are you saying?
What I'm saying is, he's looking at it from an investment standpoint, saying, I'm not going to pump all this money in if my revenues aren't skyrocketing and I'm making a good return.
Okay, I don't get it. They have the highest payroll in the league.
No. So he's saying they're making a ton of money. That maybe he doesn't care about the wins and the losses. That's at least that's where I think he was headed. They are. They're making a ton of money. Yeah, they're making a ton of money. I don't understand what the caller's saying either about they signed all those guys. They just threw another $110 million potentially at J.D. Martinez.
So did they spend poorly and they're scared and they're not spending? That's not true. They just blew through the luxury tax and paid $100 million for a guy for the highest payroll they've ever had. So what? I don't get it.
The only thing I can take from that is that he's saying they're making a ton of cash, which I knew. Again, the value of the franchise has tripled since they bought it in 15 years. Tripled.
Got Andrew in the car in the Red Sox. Go ahead, Andrew.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I wanted to revisit something, you know, a few years ago. You know, we're all different about J.D. Martinez's contract. I remember when we traded, you guys were just talking about Porcello. We traded him for Cespedes, which I personally thought was a horrible deal. But then we give out Porcello $20 million, and now we give J.D. Martinez $25 million. I'm just kind of curious why we didn't originally re-sign Cespedes, because to me, he was more of a complete player. You kind of knew what he was getting.
Should they have just signed Cespedes?
In retrospect, that would have been the easiest thing, but it sounded like he didn't want to stay here either. Remember that whole thing where they wanted him to play right field? They wanted him to play right. He didn't want to play right. He wanted to play left.
Yeah.
Like, there was that whole thing. So it felt to me like they weren't going to be able to keep him. They knew they weren't going to be able to keep him, and that was it. They cut bait, and they moved on. Like, I think that initially, though, that was the plan. Trade for Cespedes. Hopefully he can play right field at Fenway, and they get a bat there to boot. I think that's what they were angling for. And, you know, he didn't want
to
be here.
To me, in retrospect, they should have signed Encarnacion going into last year. That's the guy. And that way there, you can have Hanley DH. You have a first baseman. They can get you about 40 home runs.
Was that 3 at 60?
Yes. Yeah, what a bargain, huh?
So, I mean, it's insane to say that that's a bargain. But don't you like that contract? Even though the Sox did not get porked on the Martinez thing, wouldn't you rather at 3 at 60 versus 5 at 110?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, so I mean, to me, that's not even that's a no-brainer.
Now, look, the variable there is if Martinez hits like he's hit, he's the better player. He hits for higher average. Encarnacion's what, a 265 hitter, 260 hitter? This guy should hit 300.
So today, Martinez shows up at the Red Sox, takes a physical, and then they announce at the end of the day that it should be tomorrow?
Yes.
But it wasn't today? We've talked about the medical stuff. We've had medical issues on this team here over the last couple of years, you know, dinking around with guys and clauses. And remember when they wanted Jason Bay to get surgery on both knees?
Yes.
Remember that? And then there was a Napoli thing?
Yes.
As Stu mentioned earlier.
Happened with JD, Drew, lots of guys.
Okay. Do you think we're looking at something like that? Does your antenna raise when you see that they're waiting a day?
Not entirely yet. And when I say that, it's different. You know, different guy now. You have Dombrowski instead of Lucchino. Lucchino was the master of, you know, slipping in at the last minute and getting something more out of the deal. And that was all Lucchino's doing in all those other deals. Nope, we have this problem, you got to change the deal. Nope, we have this, you got to change that. We need this language, we need that language. And there was all kinds of stuff. I don't sense that Dombrowski's the same guy. Peter Abraham tweeted out, though, that with regard to Peter Abraham of the Globe, tweeted out that J.D. Martinez had a Liz Frank injury in his foot, so maybe there's some issue there. They want to get better clarification. They could be asking a specialist to review some test results or something of the like.
Well, that's not good.
Well, no, it isn't. I mean, but again, I wouldn't say it's overly out of the ordinary either. So it doesn't mean that the deal's dead or anything of the like, at least not yet. Not yet. So I'll tell you, right now, I'm not putting up a red flag. If it gets to tomorrow and they say they need another day, then I think you start worrying. Because everything suggests they're going to announce this thing tomorrow.
Okay, let's grab one more here before we say, or before we get to the final word. Bill in the car. Hi, Bill.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. Do you guys have any fear that J.D. Martinez is going to be the second coming of Adrian Gonzalez? He's got a sweet swing, but can't parlay that sweet swing into that short fortune left field. And Cassidy, coach of the year for the Bruins.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, Maz gave you the spray chart. Seems like the swing's going to work for Fenway Park.
I mean, it should.
And you don't care about it. You don't care about him yanking the ball over the wall, do you?
I don't, because I don't think that that's what will make him a great player here. I think a lot of guys can do that. Like, again, you know, the old Red Sox way, let's get the right-hander who's a dead pole hitter and hits it over the wall. And, you know, Shaughnessy, Murray brought this up yesterday. Shaughnessy cited Jack Clark in his column, and that one goes back now, you know, almost 30 years. Jack Clark was a bust. And you know why? Because he was a dead pole hitter. That's all he did. The best right-handed hitters at Fenway Park drive the ball to right center. Manny Ramirez hit the ball to right center. Nomar Garciaparra hit the ball to right center. You got to hit the ball the other way if you're going to hit for average. Any jackass can hit a fastball in the inside part of the plate for a home run at Fenway. Anybody can. It's easy. You don't need to pay big money for that. Any Nimrod can do it. But hitting a right-handed batter, hitting it out to right field, that's a different kind of cat.
Final word comes your way next.
You're listening to Felger and Mass on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Blood force drum!
We're gonna run him right down their throat!
Felger.
I'm a hypocrite.
Mass.
Who cares?
Felger and Mass. 98.5, The Sports Hub. Felger's expert analysis.
Not from this talk radio crazy.
Maz's hard-hitting questions.
What am I, like the freaking abrasive police here?
The caller's bringing knowledge to the table.
Maz, the adults are talking.
It's time to recap this four-hour show in 4 minutes. It's the final word on Felger and Maz on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
And the final word is brought to you by Town Fair Tire. Looking for the best deal in tires? Only one place to go, Town Fair Tire. Best prices and great free services. Nobody beats Town Fair Tire.
Nobody.
Two calls in the final word today. We'll start with Keith in New Hampshire. We heard from him earlier today.
Keith in New Hampshire. Go ahead, Keith. What do you got?
Well, first of all, I want to tell you guys, first of all, thanks for taking my call. It's the first time I called the radio station. I listen to the station every day, all day. And it just drives me crazy. You guys, Badgers, the Red Sox, my beloved Red Sox. I'm a Yankee hater, so I really hope they flop.
Keith,
I know where this is.
If this is your first time calling the station, I have to tell you, are you talking to me on like one of those little cord things that hang down?
No.
Are you talking to me like on a Bluetooth? Are you speaking into your phone?
I'm on my cell phone.
Okay, you're like on a Bluetooth thing. I can tell.
No, I'm not on a Bluetooth.
Okay, speak into the phone.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, go.
Okay, first of all, I'm a Yankee hater for life. I hate the Yankees. I hope they flop. Second of all you guys do is pick on the Red Sox. Talking about, they did that. How do you know?
Your phone blows! And I don't believe you that you're not talking to me on a Bluetooth thingy.
We don't pick on the Red Sox.
We do. It's fun. That's part of the experience.
No. We pick on everybody.
We do pick on everyone.
It's not a Red Sox thing.
But it is a Red Sox thing.
A little bit.
Yeah, you got to admit.
Yeah, but we pick on everybody. We pick on Celtics fans, Bruins fans, Patriots fans.
The Red Sox are at their best when it's a love-hate. Okay, but the thing about speaking to the phone, the phone is not meant to speak into, okay? Unless you're calling us, so then you'll have to, and so I get it. But on those rare occasions that I actually speak in the phone, do you know how I speak into the phone?
How do you speak into the phone?
Show us.
If you're watching on NBC Sports Boston, like this. I talk like this. I put the phone, I don't put it to my ear. I don't bother, this is how I speak because I'm considerate to other people because I don't carry on conversations like this.
Well, wait a minute.
You can't
hear him.
You say you're considerate to other people. If you're talking like that, that means you have your call on speakerphone, which is inconsiderate to everybody else.
No, I don't talk in crowds either. Okay, first of all, I don't talk like this. I don't talk like I'm a mile away. So
like John Henry?
I don't put the phone over here. I don't talk on a cord. I talk into the phone. I put my mouth on the phone. I talk to the phone. Also,
are we doing this again?
If you are one of those people that talk in a crowd, you, sir, are an a-hole and should be taken out back and slapped across the face. I don't care if that's on a plane.
With a wet sausage.
If you're in line, if you're at the coffee shop, if you're someone who talks in a crowd on your phone, you suck. I can do that right now. You suck.
I'm with you on that. That quiet car to New York, if you're taking the train, like that's the one. It's the quiet car. You should be choked. Like that's the one.
Anyone who decides to talk on the phone in a crowd, yeah. You suck. Text. And then when you get alone and you want to talk to someone, then you can talk to someone. And if you're talking, you're being considerate. Put the phone to your mouth.
What else we got in the final word, Murray?
Well, hold on. I'll do it like that caller. It's the first time in that I'm calling the show. I've heard the show, and I know the strict rules when it comes to callers.
But I don't know why you have to talk about my beloved Red Sox like this. We also had another call today. This is one that says here it's about it's from Tom in Rhode Island. Here's Tom in Rhode Island. Come on, work, you son of a...
Tom in Rhode Island on David Price. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Good, man.
Good. Hey, listen. I love your show, and I want to know two things. Did you like eating crow after that Super Bowl game?
Yeah.
Because you told the coach no good, the quarterback's no good.
I'm used to it by now, Tom.
Hey, and listen, the poison. How to get rid of the poison? Send them down to single A ball club with his mother-in-law and dog, You got to pay him anyway, so put him down there. Humiliate the shit out of him.
Yeah, you can't say that, Tom.
We're off to a roaring start here today, huh?
Felger and Maz.